Welcome to the final episode of Your Time in the Run, the Hunted Series 7 podcast from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always are my fellow Brit, who I can definitely say has been changed by doing this podcast because he got on another quiz show, Anthony Williams.
Hello, hello, hello.
And the lady who New South Wales police have more than a few beers wagered on the capture of, Michelle Fist-Edward.
What quiz show?
The Code. Ah. I was getting very reminiscent after I'd finished my notes last night of sort of what's happened since we started doing Hunted after 46 episodes. This may be our last Hunted episode ever.
Very sad.
Could be.
I mean, I say may because the ratings have still been very good, so I'm quietly confident that we might get an 8 series. But this might be the last Hunted episode for us, at least in terms of live recaps. This isn't me leading up to going, surprise, the first Historians of the Year is Australian Hunted, because obviously we have standards.
Hey.
But this may be the final stop for civilian Hunted with us, at least.
Sadness.
May being the opposite term. Yeah. You had good weeks?
Yeah, I've had a very good week. Very, very busy week. I've been all over the place. Gigging and conferences and, yeah, but a good week nonetheless.
I don't know whether Michelle knows this, but you were giving a talk at a conference that it turns out some of my new team members were at.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I didn't know either way. I didn't know they were there and I didn't know Ant was there.
How funny.
I only found out they were there on Friday when they started posting pictures.
Oh my gosh. I've been on holiday for a week, so it's been very nice and chill.
I'm
just here, just at home. But yeah, school holiday, so I don't work.
You also had some interactions with Kathy and Anna, I noticed. They were very lovely about
very us. Nice. Very nice. I've also had a little bit of a chat to Sade, which we started having a chat last week about our children being runners. And it was a nice chat. And then we had another little chat today.
Yeah, I had a little chat with Sade off the podcast account last night, just basically going, never have I been so glad to be misled. I'm so pleased for you.
Yeah.
She won't be pleased with us by the end of the episode, but we'll come to that. Spoilers. And in my reminiscing of this potentially being our last episode, I thought we can't leave any loose ends really for this series of the podcast. And I went to one of my friends on Saturday afternoon to play some video games, but I was driving to Manchester and I was passing a supermarket that we've talked about on this podcast actually, by the name of Waitrose. And if you cast your mind back probably about a month, we said that they now stock Australian favourite Tim Tams.
Yes.
Something we also haven't mentioned is the fact that now I'm on a semi-health kick. I mean, not properly. But I don't tend to eat until about 1 o'clock, and it's 12:05. And just for you bastards, I've had breakfast this morning so I can have some Tim Tams on this podcast. So in front of me, I actually genuinely have a milk chocolate and a caramel Tim Tam. And for the first time, I'm going to try them live on the podcast.
Oh my god, okay.
I'm going to get some proper mukbang content here. I've even actually, because I don't have hot drinks, I've even made a hot chocolate up so I can do the Tim Tam slot.
Have you had one before?
No, that's the thing. And for the record, this cost me far more than it should have done.
Oh my gosh.
Tim Tams are not cheap in the UK.
Oh, they're so good though.
They are like Posh Penguin, because you're correct.
Oh, he's having one.
There you go, you see.
I generally am.
Caramel. Are you having a caramel one? Is that why you can't speak?
Yeah, this is genuinely going to be terrible podcast audio. I'd probably get caught. I'm having a caramel Tim Tam at the moment. It's nice.
Yum, yum, yum. It's so delicious.
Also, Race Across the World. I know Ant's been watching it.
No, I'm waiting. I wanted to get
two
or three.
The only tease that I will give is that Ant did send me a message saying, it's a real shame we're not covering Race Across the World because the lads at the penis park would have been a very entertaining thing to cover.
That's something for you to look forward to, Michelle.
If we don't do Hunted next year, maybe we cover that?
Yeah, maybe. Might work timing-wise. The problem is there's 4 series to go at by that point.
That's all right.
We can't just start with Series 5.
No, we'll do some Historians and then bring it up to speed.
Yeah, potentially. Watch this space. And something I forgot to mention last week was that Hunter Jordan is doing a charity triathlon. I don't know how much of this you guys have seen, but he's going entirely human powered from the Leaning Tower of Pisa to the Eiffel Tower to Blackpool Tower.
Wow.
To raise money for the army cadets, which he does a lot of work with. It's entirely human powered, so he's like kayaking the English Channel, I believe. And every mode of transport he uses that isn't his own body is recycled in some way. So it's a wooden bike, I think. The kayak he's doing over the English Channel is made of recycled bottles. So yeah,
a wooden wow. bike.
That's an interesting
a
thing.
Bike.
That's really yeah. cool.
You can yeah, recycle bike. Metal.
That is true. You can recycle metal.
Yeah, I think it's a wooden frame. Okay. But yeah, he's as of today, at least of Monday when we're recording this, he's 5 days into it. I think it is, and just got through the French Riviera.
Well, is anyone else doing it? Like, is it a group thing or just him?
No, it's just him. Just him. He does crazy challenges. He's also doing it in memory of the little boy in Blackpool, which is his hometown, who got struck by lightning a few years ago while playing football.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets to Blackpool Tower, apparently he's unveiling some sort of memorial to him.
Fabulous.
And off the back of last week, we have had another Alex Ayling message as well. You'd be pleased to know.
What did he say?
Okay.
Luckily, I didn't see this until after I watched the finale last night. He said, "Hello again, Michael, Anthony and Michelle. Bloody effing hell, that was a good final episode. I found that train sequence to be pretty bloody tense considering the clear fake-out last week's trailer fed us, and Sade getting to the very end when it almost seemed like we would have our version of the Dutch hunted speedboat scenario, either Sade not making it in time or getting nabbed within spitting distance of the extraction vehicle. Either way, I enjoyed this episode, I think primarily because I was convinced the Hunters would win and that I was wrong in the process. Deserved winners, and now that's a permutation that can be ticked off the Hunted Winners bingo card. One prediction of mine that seems to potentially hold weight is the idea that this could be the last series of Civilian Hunted, as there wasn't the call for participants for Series 8 at the end. Looks like this show will join Amazing Race on that Viking funeral boat. And, of course, motorbikes. Anyways, looking forward to the recap in a few days' time. Stay well, all the best to the three of you, and until our paths cross once more inside the interwebs, auf Wiedersehen."
Yes, motorbikes.
Brilliant. Yes, what the hell?
I think for comedy purposes, the extraction vehicles should have been motorbikes this year.
I just don't understand why did you make a big deal about motorbikes in episode one? They have had no consequence at all.
I know.
There's not been any motorbike action.
Yeah, my favourite thing is we've seen the two hunters who are on motorbikes, Nicola and Steve, in a Land Rover more than we've seen them on motorbikes.
What? What are you doing?
But yes, motorbikes indeed. So previously, Kathy and Anada went to a regatta in Folkestone and were quickly dispatched before finding out they were Lisa's favourites. Jackson and Nicola returned home to wish the Kingpin a happy Father's Day before having a close shave in one of Terry's friend's compounds. However, in a surprise second capture for the episode, Alex also made his way to his dad's, but despite preparing some ham rolls for the journey, he was caught by JP dressed as a bush. The episode ended with the final four all making their way back to London to find out the extraction point. We begin on day 18, and Dr. Steve Hersey reminds us that London has instant facial recognition and makes HQ's lives easier.
Yeah, and this is a weird thing, right? Why have they sent them all the way to London to find out they've got to go to the Lake District? It's just weird.
It's a different take on the whole, by accessing this information, HQ have been made aware of your location thing, which I hate. I hate this less because there is a chance that they can escape it.
Yeah.
It's
slightly better. Yeah.
It's still ridiculous because obviously they knew that Jackson and Nicola were heading towards London for some reason and then they could work out a direction of travel. But I hate it less than I hate the instant, we're going to give them a notification 2 days beforehand just to make their lives easier.
And if they found, Jackson so quickly, why didn't they find Sade and Cameron? In London. How come they had no intel on them in London at all?
Because they knew that Jackson and Nicola were heading towards Leeds train station. So they were already monitoring Jackson and Nicola to work out a direction of travel generally and then found out the whole London thing.
They must have got there after. Mm.
Yeah, they got the notification quicker on Jackson and Nicola because they were already monitoring Jackson and Nicola.
Yeah.
Whereas Shadi and Cameron did a better job of actually hiding.
Shadi and Cameron have done an excellent job of hiding full stop, because if we look back, we've seen virtually nothing that gave away where they were. And both teams clearly have managed to go an entire week without anybody spotting where they were.
The other element of this is, of course, that maybe there was a bit of them underestimating Sade.
Yes.
As we'll get to in this episode. They put Sade and Cameron, but mainly Sade, on the back burner because they thought Jackson and Nicola would have been the bigger threat. And maybe they were right to think they were a threat, but also Sade is a bigger threat than they gave her any credit for.
Correct.
Yes.
Who did the chief ask to pop his shirt in?
I was just about to say, we need our traditional Doug getting undermined moment first, which is, of course, Lisa selling him to the shirt. I love that the editors just seem to like teasing Doug as much as we do this series.
Can somebody just respect Doug a little bit, please? Come on.
Head of Cyber Doug, or whatever title they've given him now. HQ know that Jackson and Nicola are on their way to London, and Ray says he would rather swallow barbed wire, pull it out of his backside, and floss himself to death than let them win, which is potentially his most graphic metaphor ever.
Oh my God.
He's clearly reached the end of his book of cliches now.
Yeah. But nobody in HQ pulled him up on it. Nobody in HQ went, seriously, Ray, that's a little bit, you know, graphic.
Just going, just Ray being Ray.
Yeah. Both sets of fugitives are in black cabs on their way to designated news agents to find a memory stick, which contains the information. Jackson and Nicola collect theirs in Marylebone and Sade and Cameron in Victoria.
How do you know where Sade and Cameron got theirs from? Did I miss that?
Yes, it said it on the screen.
Okay.
It did say, yeah.
It said Victoria. Sade and Cameron use a stranger's laptop in Acosta, and they must decode an encoded message which sounds like it's done by Jigsaw.
Yeah, for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, they just gave them an alphanumeric code, which spells out Lake District. You know, that nice, narrow bit of area known as the Lake District.
Is that all they had? Did they have anything else?
That's all they got at that point.
When did they get anything else?
Presumably off screen. But yeah, all they got in the encoded message was 12, 1, and so on, until it spelled
out
Lake District.
But I thought maybe we missed stuff, because... how can you have Lake District? It's huge.
There's a little bit of narration later on that just tells them that they've got to go to the right place, which is again, weirdly done. I don't know why they didn't make something like that. I can't remember the exact time point, but it's like a day or two
before.
How
did they get it?
We don't know.
Presumably it was just the embedded producer saying, okay, you've decoded Lake District correctly. Here's the actual location.
Yeah, we just got one sentence from the narrator saying the fugitives have been told to go to Sticklethorpe. That was it.
I do wonder whether it was a concerted effort to tip the table slightly away from the hunters being able to just capture one of them and find out the exact extraction point.
Well,
because that was the main complaint with the last one-way extraction area, which was the Bullring Shopping Centre.
Yeah.
The reason that they got the Bullring is because he got caught right beforehand and had Birmingham written down, and then they could just narrow it down because there's not many places a helicopter can land.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't give the fugitives all the information straight away, then the hunters can't get an exact
I'm wondering where was, you know, the memory stick? Was it still in Sade's bag when she left her bag, or did she leave it in her pocket? That's something I was wondering about when I saw the bags. I thought, oh my God, is the memory stick in the bag?
Well, the memory stick would have only given them Lake District anyway. So if it wasn't a plot point, we probably wouldn't have seen it. Maybe it was still in a bag. Did you also notice that the extraction info said Hunter 2022 on it?
No,
I didn't notice that. I noticed the envelope said FAO, Jackson and Nicola.
Yeah, when Sade and Cameron put it into the laptop, and I presume it was a Spanish student or something, because VLC seemed to be in Spanish, it said Hunter 2022 extraction information on it. Jackson and Nicola's cab is put on ANPR. He overhears them talking about the Lake District and gives some advice to get to Oxford on a bus at Notting Hill Gate Station. Lindsay and HQ then rings Joe the cabbie at 11:32 a.m. He refuses to give them any information, even for 500 quid. He does, however, say that they could pick the fugitives up in about an hour and a half.
How did HQ find the taxi driver?
ANPR. Because they saw Jackson and Nicola getting into the cab.
I must have missed that bit.
It's the perils of them being in London is all the facial recognition. Mm. It's easier to track them. Jackson then reiterates his reason for wanting to win, which is that he spent so much money on his surgery that that debt would be wiped out and he could start afresh as Jackson. Nicola, however, we don't hear anything from for the entire series, let's be honest.
For the whole series, we've heard nothing apart from how Nicola's supporting her brother. That's pretty much all we need to know.
HQ then gets CCTV from Oxford train station and JP and Mel head there. Jackson and Nicola are on their way to Manchester on the train. JP then watches the CCTV at the station and confirms that not only did they get on the train, but they said to some of the staff members they were heading to Manchester. Kirsty can get on the train in plain clothes at Stafford in time, and she just has to make sure that they don't get off midway.
Why on earth can't she just walk up the train and tap them both on the shoulder? She's touched them. They're done.
Precisely.
What?
Precisely, Michelle. Why? This makes no sense.
Was she actually on the train with them or not?
I have a feeling she was on the train with them because we saw them in the same shot.
Okay.
Only once, but she was definitely on the same train as them. I have a feeling that they didn't get permission to film on the train, which is why. Because all of Kirsty's filming was just done on the phone.
Jackson was filmed on the train because he was filmed talking.
I think that was just GoPro-y stuff. I don't think they had the actual permission to properly film on the train.
But can't they film on trains?
There's definitely shots of Jackson and Nicola, so there's definitely a camera person on board.
Yeah. I think it was covert filming rather than proper camera filming.
So you think
filming.
That's why?
I think it could be something like that.
Do that because her camera person couldn't follow.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my God. Imagine being that close and not being able to do it because you don't have permission.
Yeah, it feels a bit sus though. It's a bit weird. It's like they're trapped on a train. They're not going anywhere between stations. Just literally walk up to them.
There is a bigger problem here in the fact that they chose the one hunter who Jackson and Nicola literally slammed the door in the face of.
Yeah.
But she can walk up behind them so easily and just tap them both on the shoulder. Your time on the run is over.
Yeah. Something in the rules stopped her being able to do it, and we just don't know what.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say. But yeah, it really made me laugh that going back to our theory from a few weeks ago about how you can't really have Jordan hiding in plain clothes because he's so recognisable, having been on every series and all that sort of stuff. You pick one of the new hunters who they don't know before this series. You put her on a train. Great idea. However, it's the one hunter who they've seen most recently. The last that Jackson and Nicola saw of them, maybe 10 days ago at this point, was Terry's mate slamming the door in her face.
Yep.
They were literally chased through a warehouse by Kirsty. There is no sense in putting her as the one on the train undercover. So Kirsty confirms eyes on, but she can't capture them until another team is on board. The rule may very well have been that they can only catch one person each. So Kirsty may have been able to catch one of them, but she wouldn't have been able to catch both of them, and then the other one would have just got away.
Why would that
anyway.
Have been a rule? Has that,
I don't know.
What? So one person hasn't ever caught two people in the one episode?
Not that I can think of. Because what I'm thinking of here is the fact that it's established that she can't capture them both until another team's on board. Whether that's just a rule that Lisa put into place that she wanted both caught at the same time or something, I don't know. But it was stupid anyway.
Yeah, there's some weird shenanigans that we don't know about.
So she keeps a distance and monitors them as they get to Manchester Piccadilly, but they are heading to Newtonley Willows and away from the exits where the ground hunters actually are. Also, having been to Manchester Piccadilly many a time, amused me that they said, yeah, we're covering all the exits. And it's like, no, you're covering two of them.
There are
like seven. Literally, the one where they were hiding at Greg's or whatever it was is the main entrance. But there's also the Metrolink one, which has about four different exits on its own. There's also the car park one. There's also the one on the offshoot where they ended up getting the train to Newtonley Willows and Chester from. There's loads of them.
Yeah. It's not an easy place to pin down. So, but yeah, that is the main one.
They covered maybe the main exits, but Jackson and Nicola, having semi-local knowledge at least, because they are from Greater Manchester, they have probably been to Piccadilly a few times, but they could have, using local knowledge, probably just got on the tram and gone to Victoria.
Yeah.
And HQ would have never found out about it. Jackson spots Hunter Nicola on the platform and they scarp onto the Transport for Wales train. Edas saw CCTV, and Nicola and Steve jump on that train too. They try and open the toilet door, and we are led to believe that is where Jackson and Nicola are hiding.
It was a lovely little bit of editing, wasn't it?
It's the only time this series I felt like the new editors have got the spirit of the old editors.
Yes.
Because this was a wonderful fake-out.
Oh, it was brilliant. They are in a toilet. Someone is knocking on a toilet door. Also, hunters are knocking on a toilet door. It
so
was
I'd
great.
So I'd like to know who was knocking on their door.
Just someone who needed a piss.
Yeah, just that random.
And why did you knock on a door? And why did Jackson say something in a really deep voice like, "Oi, go away"? Like, why didn't he? Yeah, why didn't he say anything? I don't understand.
Keep talking.
Oh my god.
It was a great scene. It was very, very funny. Just the knocking. I kind of knew that it wasn't going to be who they thought it was, but it was well done.
So they get up in Warrington, and Lisa says she's royally pissed off. They blag a lift to one of Nicola's friend's houses. They then refocus on Shardy and Cameron and wonder how they'll escape from London, and all of the family are on monitoring. And they are back in Nottingham, having hitchhiked all the way from London. Sade's parents then help get them out, and HQ get ANPR of her dad Jonathan's car, and it is too much of a coincidence that everyone seems to be travelling north. They are then dropped off in Chapel-on-le-Frith, and Cameron did the show to prove to his mum that he could do it, and be an independent man. Sade says Cameron has been changed by the show, and she's been honoured to witness the change in him.
And even at this point, I'm still on board with our theory.
Yes, so was I. I thought, knowing that the hunters were going to at least see Cameron and Sade, that it was more likely that Cameron would be able to outrun them and Sade wouldn't.
Yeah, lovely, lovely misdirection.
Knowing that Sade's going to listen to this, I feel really bad for the amount of shitting on your abilities that we've done on this podcast.
I know, but it's not our fault. We've been led to these conclusions.
I don't think I did. I think
no,
you
I'm
two
mainly
did.
Talking about myself here. We were led to believe that Shardo was going to be the vulnerable one in the team, and we were wrong. I'm happy to eat humble pie when I'm wrong in this
but
case.
Look, I'm glad. When they got up and they had the GoPros on, I thought, oh, Jesus, they've got GoPros on. And then I was thinking, maybe towards the end, maybe that when they've all got the extraction point, they all have to just wear GoPros for the last 3 days, maybe. But when they had them on, then they were found and cameras started running, I'm like, yes, this is the running scene that I've been waiting for. And he did get away the first bit. And then he came out of hiding. Why did he come out of hiding?
Well, he can see the drone as well. Oh, there's a drone up there. I know. I'll break cover now. No!
Why? Why?
I mean, I don't hate it, but we'll get to that. There is a bit of logic to it.
Get us there.
So HQ get the ping for Chapel-on-le-Frith and monitor all public transport to try and pick them up. In Culchuth, Jackson and Nicola have found safety, and they want to have won it together. And then on day 20, Shardy and Cameron get a bus to Manchester, then on to Burnley for their
Why?
Sins.
Wait a minute. What does that line mean?
Burnley's a shithole. Everyone knows that.
Okay. I don't know that.
They've got those weird buses that go down the motorway from Manchester. They're just bizarre.
The Pendle Witch. As the buses are called.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they're called the Witch Way or something, aren't they?
Yeah, Burnley is a lawless place. Yeah, so HQ gets CCTV from both buses, and Cameron's tent is basically a giant tracker to Dr. T. Percy. JP and Mella then sent to Skipton in a bid to try and jump past them. Unfortunately for Shardy and Cameron, they do get the 12:40 bus to Skipton, and Ashley's instinct was correct.
Spot on the money there, Ashley. Well done.
However, Shardy and Cameron worry about being so bleeding obvious, which they're correct to, and they get off one stop early at the A59, and then we cut back to the scene that we saw at the start of the first episode of them rapping alongside the road. Now the fun bit. Because Mel works it out, and then goes along the towpath, but they're hitchhiking along the A59, and JP spots them as he drives past their spot. They run into the woods, and he tells Cameron to stop running, and...
As if.
I mean, he hasn't learnt his lesson yet. He doesn't. He then starts chanting, it actually probably the most emotional bit of the episode, starts chanting, "Mum will be fine, you're a man, you can do this." And interestingly, the the subtitles started stacking on each other, which they never normally do.
I didn't have them on mine.
No, it wasn't an additional subtitle. It was the subtitle because he was speaking quite quietly and Janet interrupted.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
But usually they just do them on a single line. They decided to keep stacking them every time he said it, which I thought was an interesting editing choice. Sade is hiding in a tree as Mark and Paul also turn up. I don't think we've actually seen Mark and Paul this series, which was interesting that they were just roped in the last second.
No, I think you're right.
And she can see them all hiding in the field. Cameron says he's one of the good guys. He won't hurt the sheep as he doesn't eat meat. And as we said, the drone is sent up to try and smoke him out. And Sade sees it and hides even more. However, Cameron couldn't be any less subtle in his white t-shirt.
But why?
Sade did have a good colour top on at this point. She's got like a green top to hide brilliantly.
Thermal is then switched on and something is in the trees, which is known as Sade. And the drone spots Cameron running through the field and all units are sent towards him. Now, Sade will confirm this and we'll probably never actually get to it in a podcast. But I have a feeling that they'd agreed if this ever happened, this sort of a situation, that Cameron would try and lure them away because he's most likely to be able to outrun them.
Well, they certainly took that bait, didn't they?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense if you look at it through that lens that Sade doesn't move and Cameron does immediately because he can outrun them in theory. The only reason Cameron gets caught is because they pincer him. It's not because a hunter actually catches up to him.
No, that was never going to happen. He's off like a rocket.
That's what I mean. So I think if you're going into this as a pair and you go, well, as long as one of us wins, both of us win.
Exactly.
You work out what the best tactic is if this sort of a nightmare situation happens and it's, well, you're less likely to be able to outrun them, so you hide as much as you can and I'll just take off. And if we split up, we split up. We'll meet up at the end and we'll both win. But if one of us gets caught, it's better than both of us getting caught.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a good tactic. If you are going to split, definitely go off in different directions and just hope.
Yeah. So I think that was actually the logic here, was that they probably had an off-screen agreement that if this happens, you leg it, try and lure them away and just try and get away.
Mm-hmm. Does beg one question for me.
What's that?
Where's the crying scene?
Yeah. So I think we may have seen a glimpse of it. It looked like it might have actually been a cut bit of him sitting at the bus stop when they had their argument.
Could have been. They've used it cleverly though, haven't they, to make it look like...
Because it looked like he was in a tent when we first saw it in that Next Time trailer. So Cameron legs it down the canal towpath, pursued by hunters, and sadly for him, he's heading towards Mel, who's trying to cut him off. And my next note is simply, exit pursued by a hunter. And his time on the run is unfortunately over, and that means that we picked the wrong member of the family to suspect.
Yep. Again. Do you know what? If this does turn out to be the final series, how brilliant that we've gone all that way, very rarely getting the outcome wrong, and then in the very last series they've just thrown us a complete curveball. That's brilliant.
Why does Sade come out of hiding, do you think?
Because all of the hunters had disappeared to chase after a 19-year-old sprinter son.
She actually, I did talk to her. She said she'd been hiding for a long, long time before she got up.
Yeah, it looked like she probably had been.
Yeah, because if you look at the timeline of the rest of the episode for Sade, she basically must have spent like 2 hours hiding in those woods.
Why didn't the heat sensing equipment get her then? I wonder. I thought they'd only got him.
Well, the thermal imaging saw her hiding in the woods. And then when he saw the drone, he broke cover and that distracted
them. And they didn't
go
back?
No. They didn't go back in time. Because Paul finds where she was hiding.
Yeah.
And all the flat grass. She'd gone by then.
Yeah.
So he refuses to tell Lisa anything about extraction as he gets money if she wins too, which was a lovely bit of honesty from him. I mean, it's been heavily implied in previous series, but I don't think it's actually been blatantly said that, if my partner wins, I'm getting money too.
What we don't know, though, is how it gets split, do we? Did it get split two ways because two teams made it back, or does it get split three ways because three people?
They're treated as individuals.
Okay.
So, assuming that Cameron and Sade split the money equally, then he will get a sixth of it and she'll get a sixth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then Nicola and Jackson will get a third each.
Yep.
He He says, if you mess with the cub, the lion's mama will
bite. I like that.
Back. I thought you might. And Mark finds their bags in the hills, including the sign for the A65 Kendall. Is that the direction of extraction? Yes.
Yes, it is. Unfortunate.
We then cut to 4 hours until extraction. Lisa says she wants a clean sweep, and five hunter teams are around the Lake District. Jackson and Nicola are worth some beers, and Sade's worth a bottle of wine, and she's quietly confident they will get it. And they must climb to Stickle Tarn, where a helicopter will leave at 12
p.m. I had to Google Stickle Tarn for the actual word, because I couldn't hear it. I thought it was Stipple Town. And then what was the place they were camping on? Firth or Firth?
Like, Chapel and Little Frith.
Frith, not even Firth. I'm like, what the hell are these names this episode? I can't. I have to Google everything.
Chapelon-le-Frith is actually complicated by the fact that it's in French as well.
Yeah, just randomly. There's no logic to it, Michelle. The English town names could just be anything.
This is the point where I go back to our discussion after we'd recorded last week, because I had a look at what the description was going to be for this episode. And it was like, oh yeah, they got to climb 1,500 feet up a mountain. So I looked on Wikipedia to try and work out roughly where it was. And there's far too many mountains for that. I'd sort of assumed it would end up being the Lake District. And then when we get the extraction information, it's just like, Lake District. So I went, that's helpful. Thanks. This is a bit of a nasty extraction point.
Just a bit.
Not all of this cast would have been able to make it up there.
We could have seen some hilarity ensuing, I think, if some of the other teams had got this far.
Yeah. And the other bit of it is, doing a helicopter extraction in the lakes is a very interesting idea, because it's green for a reason. It's always raining.
The weather
raining.
Was coming in. You could see it at the end.
Yeah.
Mm.
The weather in the Lake District is notoriously foul because they get like 300 days of rain a year.
Mm-hmm. And the higher up you get, the colder and wetter it becomes.
But this ending was reminding me of Amazing Race Australia, the finale. To win, they had to get to the mat, which is at the top of this, like this place. It was huge, and they were sweating and trying to get up to the top. Obviously, these guys aren't sweating, I don't think, but it was just arduous.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know what they would have done if the helicopter couldn't land.
Mm. Well, they'd have just spliced it in the following day, presumably.
The alternative is maybe that's the reason why it was just Lake District.
Yeah, maybe they had a couple of extractions and
weather
dependent.
Because, let's be honest, the Lake District, helicopter isn't the first thing you think of with Lake District. You probably think boat.
Yeah.
I wonder whether it was weather dependent and they would just change it at the last minute if they needed to.
Could be. It certainly made for a really tense ending, which I liked. I liked that a lot.
Mainly me shouting at my computer screen last night, come on, Shada, you can climb.
I was screaming. I was like, Shada, get up! Get up! Run! I was going off.
I sent Shada a message just basically going, it's a good job I live alone.
I was bashing the bed with my fist, and Amber's beside me just looking at me. And I'm going, run! Get up! Don't lie down!
So Sade's 50 miles away and he doctor's surgery, and the nurse's cousin Sheila is going to come down and give her a lift. Jackson and Nicola are still more than an hour out. They go into a pub to hide out, but Nicola's worried about being grassed on. Sade gets a lift, which is only two cars behind one of the hunters, presumably Paul.
Can I just say, why did they go in the pub? Why? 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 Couldn't they just sit behind the wall? They could have hidden behind the wall that she was leaning on.
I think it's so they weren't as conspicuous.
Lie down behind the wall. It's not that hard.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're driving past and you see someone lying
but
behind a stone wall in the Lake District, you're gonna go, what the bloody hell are you doing? And it's gonna draw attention.
You can't see them behind the stone wall if you're lying down.
Those stone walls aren't that tall, Michelle.
No, I don't fall out with sitting in the pub, because the one thing you're going to see lots of in the Lake District is people who look like they're out walking and hiking and stuff, so they would just blend in brilliantly.
it's better cover for the fugitives to hide in a pub there. Obviously, you run the risk of exactly what happens and someone ringing up from the pub going, yeah, they're in our pub. I see the logic in it.
Yeah.
So Ed gets a positive sighting for the pub and Daisy gets the helicopter details and all units are sent to Stickletown and Dr. Steve Hersey realises that the extraction is a foot race up a mountain. Shardo then gets dropped off at Dungeon Gill, the start point of the hike. JP and Mel are 1 mile out and the only team who could make it. My next note after this was just, I think it's not going to be a clean sweep because you can see what time it is on JP's watch.
Okay.
And it was 11:36. Which is, yes, enough for them to sprint up the mountain. But they've already established that it takes like 40 minutes to walk up and 20 minutes if you run. That's not giving them much buffer to catch three separate people.
And it's not just they've got to get... They're following a moving target as well, right? So they've got to be faster than...
And yes, there is a chance of them getting Shardé, because obviously she's slower than Jackson and Nicola are. But still, you're probably not going to catch all three.
Oh, no, definitely not.
No, because if they do catch Shardé, then that's going to take a couple of minutes out, isn't it? So with only one team...
Yeah, and as has been previously established, they can't catch more than one person each.
Apparently.
So they'd have to basically say... Right, Shadow, your time on the run's over. We're going to now run off and try and catch Jackson and Nicola. And she'd just be like, oh, but can you just tell me about Cameron? And just trying to slow him down.
Shadow said she could see the hunters when she was running up the mountain.
What? They weren't in the same screen.
No, she was saying she could see them, though. They weren't in the same screen, correct?
Yeah, she could see them, but she could see them because she was much higher than they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that would still be pretty terrifying, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's terrifying, but do I think Shadow is in as much danger of being caught as we saw? Probably not.
No, probably not.
And Ray reckons that Shadow's going to struggle with the climb, and she'll be blowing out of her ass, apparently. JP and Mel are then on the path and approaching the fugitives, and it's genuinely tense despite the fact there's never actually any danger of capture. Jackson and Nicola reach 1,300 feet as the weather closes in. Nicola gets in a helicopter, and a drone's also put in the air. Not that the drone would be able to fly in that weather, I suspect. The extraction helicopter then pulls into land. The drone picks up Shardé climbing and struggling. She apparently spots Mel, and she says she's doing it for Cameron, and pushes herself up. Jackson and Nicola then board the chopper, as does Shardé, and Hunter and Nicola can't land, which means they all win.
Ta-da!
JP confirms the loss in the traditional Sherlock and Jordan position. I can't remember who confirmed the loss last time. It might have been JP when Nathan and Sarah escaped. Lisa says that they were close in 9 captures of the 12 fugitives, but not close enough. Jackson says he's shown people that if you're born in the wrong body, it's not the end of the world. You can still do anything. And Shardé would love Cameron to be next to her, but she's won for them both.
Yay.
And at this point, I'm not crying, you're crying.
Definitely got tears in my eyes.
I don't think there's a more fitting way for them to end the series than with Shardé having the goodbye there. Because, yeah, Jackson and Nicola were fun telly, but I think Shardé and Cameron were the real heart of the series, to be honest.
Yeah, they've been brilliant the whole way. And I love that we've been completely wrong-footed by this is all about Cameron. He's going to make it to the end and show his mum. And actually, what it showed us is that mum is the real hero here.
Yeah. Mum knows best.
Yeah.
Yay.
And weirdly, the podcast is actually quite themed this week because we have Mum knows best here. We've got my mum's birthday tomorrow, the day that this comes out. And then the Belgian Mole episode this week, I believe, doesn't have a family visit. It has a mother visit.
Yeah.
All the candidates' mums are coming to Sicily, apparently, which is such a this show point.
I can add something. I was out shopping today and there was just a hell of a lot of Mother's Day gifts scattered around as well, which is in Australia in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say Mother's Day was a few weeks ago, Michelle.
Yeah, it's weird that they have it in different times.
10th of March.
We have it the second Sunday of May.
So, next question. Do you think this is going to be the end of civilian
hunting? You said you haven't seen anything, so why would it be?
because by this point, all right, so first of all, this was filmed 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And nothing's happened. And they've just aired it and not asked for any contestants.
That's a bit weird, because normally they do now, don't they?
Yeah, normally it's by episode 5 or 6, they do the, do you think you could go on the run? Thing at the end of the episode.
So it doesn't mean it's necessarily cancelled. It means, as far as we can tell, there are no plans to do another one.
I think the thing in its favour is certainly that the ratings have held up. The ratings have been very decent. It's won its time slot at least one of these episodes, if not more than that. The fan reaction seems to be decent for it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My gut instinct is that there will be a Series 8. It just won't necessarily be next year.
Yeah.
I think the pace that we've seen for Civilian Hunted is they do it every other year now, and that it could very well be at the end of Celebrity Hunted later in the year they go, and do you think you could go on the run at the end of that rather than now?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's necessarily a full stop for Civilian Hunted. I think probably we're not going to get into Civilian Hunted next year, is my gut.
That's sad.
Yeah. If it is, then I just want to say thank you to everyone who's been involved in the podcast, because Hunted has been a very fun show for us to cover, especially. I can't think of another show where we've had so many people involved in the show and in the fan communities actually reaching out to us. Belgian Mole's probably the other one, but Belgian Mole's a special case because we harassed Jill until he actually bothered to see us. But Hunted has been a very fascinating show for us to talk about, I think.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, even from the get-go, you know, when we first started with season two, how, you know, we built some really good friendships with the fugitives along the way, and we've had some great interactions with all the hunters. It's been lovely.
And Kevin.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget Gold Command in there.
Yeah.
Thank you also to Sherlock for not getting the restraining order when I bumped into his commanding officer and got him to send you a text. Thank you also to Sherlock for not harassing us for, you know, the nickname Sherlock. Cannot forget that, you know, that did appear in the Radio Times because of us.
Yes,
I think it also appeared in an interview of some description where, no, it was for Australian Hunted, actually. He was described as nicknamed Sherlock, and I'm just like, oh, we've done a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, we may have caused some trouble.
I want to see that. Where was that?
I can't remember. This is series one of Australian Hunted, I think. It was one of the Australian TV sites. They were like, and coming over from the UK, Hunted is Ben Owen, nicknamed Sherlock. And I'm just like, oh, wow, we have some impacts here.
Oh, that was amazing. I still maintain Sherlock's Bongo is the best name of any episode we've ever done.
Yeah, it's certainly up there. So we have, I hope, amused you along the way. We've certainly made some lifelong friendships from covering the show. I definitely don't think I would have gone from finding out the series started literally 2 minutes walk from my work at the time to sneakily having a Pizza Express non-woking with two of its winners who forgot where the gig they were seeing was actually going to be. I don't think we ever told that story in the podcast either. Regardless, this won't be the last podcast that we do together as a trio, at least until New South Wales police catch up with Michelle.
Never.
And I was also noting down last night of sort of all the fun stories that have come out of the podcast and stuff that we may or may not have discussed for a bit of a quick fire round, I suppose. So Sherlock in the Radio Times, I know we definitely discussed. Matt Mason stopping a thief at Tesco when he was doing a rowing challenge. Can't remember whether we discussed that at the time.
I think so.
Because he was doing some sort of charity event of a 12-hour row or whatever it was on a rowing machine in the foyer, one of my local Tesco's actually. And he spotted someone nicking some booze, I think it was. And the staff members aren't allowed to go out and challenge them, obviously, because there's the risk of getting stabbed or whatever. Matt, big rock hard, just thought, I'll sprint across the car park and collar him, and he did. Pizza Express visit with Dan and Joe at the wrong venue. Don't think we ever actually discussed that I went to Pizza Express with Dan and Joe the week after they won.
No.
But they were going seeing a gig at the Lowry in Salford. So they're like, oh, just come down and we'll have tea beforehand. So I did. And then I got a message off him a few days beforehand going, yeah, we're still on, but the gig's actually not at the Lowry. It's at somewhere else in Manchester. And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. So they actually made a special trip to come to the Lowry just to see me, aww, to then go back on themselves and actually go to where they went to the gig, which I thought was very sweet. Lolly's message that you arranged, Dan.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it?
Always fun to hear from Lolly. That was the Christmas message, I seem to remember, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God, yeah, I'd almost forgotten that.
Yeah. The code clue, obviously. We had so much fun with Hunted US, generally, but sneaking We Are on TV on April 4th past Michelle. One of the highlights of my life. And the, no way, gif that then came out of it. Also on Hunted US, Flatcap Charlie.
Yes.
Yay.
And Lee and Hilmar, and us surprising Lee's wife, Beth, with the question, can you name the hunters? As our one question that we actually pitched to her. Also on that note, don't think we ever discussed CBS messing us about with how we were going to talk to Lee and Hilmar, because they told us that it needed to be a phone interview so that someone, that a press officer could dial in. They told Lee and Hilmar it needed to be a phone interview because someone from the press office needed to dial in because it was like a week after their season had finished. And then they didn't turn up at all. It was just us and Lee and Hilmar, so we could have done it normally. And
I love, I bring that story up all the time, that we beat rap. We beat rap. I'm going to live on that.
Yep, we did. We are still Lee and Hilmar's best friends. I also don't think we discussed the fact that Hilmar's iconic fox shirt that he wore at the end, I did try and get for when I was on the chase, and it had sold out, and I couldn't. Dear. So I did try and source that shirt just as a sort of nod to both the podcast and Lee and Hilmar. Meeting up with Alex right before COVID, the three of us, that was a delight as always. Also Rob, who needs to tell me next time he's actually in the north, because he keeps coming up here and they're not telling me. I think we were the first people to find out about James's ankle being properly broke when he got caught.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock's former commanding officer, obviously I've told that story a few times, I think, but it just delights me the fact that I got a question wrong on the run-through about how many minutes of adverts you're allowed on UK TV, trying to use Hunted logic on it, and the medic just went, are you talking about Hunted? One of my former subordinates was a hunter on that. I'm like, interesting. Then it turns out it's Sherlock, because of course it is. And much more recently, obviously, Michelle's favourite hunter, the bit of all right.
Oh, yeah. She wasn't on, like, oh, I think we saw one bit of her. That's all.
Yeah, she was the one who found the helicopter. But yeah, I still find myself in quiet moments just going, she's a bit of all right. It's one of my favourite clips also, of you, Michelle. Also, it just really makes
We have to, you know, just have a little memory for Danny and her, come on!
Oh, of course.
Come on! We could have done with her this week. Yeah. Come on!
She wouldn't have let anyone get off that mountain. My final question, I suppose, is do you guys have a guess on what the banner's going to be?
I have no idea.
Because there's one moment I deliberately didn't mention in the episode there that really made me laugh. That is
when Sade actually like falls into the helicopter and falls onto Jackson. Oh no. Yeah?
You're very close.
Wait, when they're holding hands. I love that bit when they're all holding hands.
It's right after she gets on the helicopter. She collapses into Jackson, and then there's a few moments of it, like with her mouth open, and then she sort of recovers and just looks like she's possessed. Bless you, Sade, because I know you're going to listen to this, but I must have rewound that 5 times because it made me laugh so much. Because it's just a split second of Sade looking like she's expelling some sort of demon from an exorcism. It just really made me laugh.
I just love the bit where she just...
Oh, I'll send you the banner after this because it just really tickled
fell.
Me.
Well, she didn't fall, but it looked like she fell into the helicopter and she can't move. And there's that skerrick of hair coming down onto her face. Like she's absolutely spent. She can't move. I just love that.
Yeah, it just really tickled me. Like I always try for the finales to have banners of the winners and all that sort of stuff. But I just couldn't resist using Sade looking like she'd recovered from an exorcism as the banner.
Which she practically has.
Have you guys got anything else you want to say about this series and potentially show?
Please make more.
We need more. Because Michael won't talk about Australian Hunted.
Well, no, not just me. Ant won't either, because he thought it was crap.
I just could not do it. I tried so hard. You know this is my favourite show, and it was just, no.
Yeah.
I don't understand why. I don't know why they couldn't just follow the pattern. CBS managed.
Yeah, they did. I mean, for all its sins, CBS Hunted was very good. It's just Australian Hunted wasn't and somehow got recommissioned.
Lots of times.
So, thank you for listening to our Hunted recaps, all series and, let's be honest, 7-8 series long. We'll be back very soon for more episodes, hopefully. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube or Instagram where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us on contact at rtvwarriors.com. Anthony's on the Asus formerly known as Twitter at Bullsboy. Michelle is Bear333333333 and I'm MJ Harmstone. We will see you very soon for more episodes, but for this series, and maybe forever, your time on the run is over.
Bye-bye. Bye.